It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Diversity is not something Iowa is known for, but the state is becoming more diverse in many ways. And this hour, we'll explore religious diversity in Iowa. Later today, Maeve Callen, Associate Professor of Religion at Simpson College, will be giving a talk as part of the Iowa International Center's Dialogue series. It's today at the Meredith Conference Corps in Des Moines at noon, and it is open to the public. Her talk is called What We Believe, Understanding Religious and Cultural Identities in Iowa, and this hour we're going to explore that topic. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by representatives from a number of different faiths. We also want to hear from you. We want to hear about your experience this hour as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now is Maeve Callen. Hello, Maeve.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And let's take a little picture of Iowa over time before we start talking about religious diversity in the state today. Because, as I mentioned, Iowa is not a place that is particularly well known for diversity. We've had a fairly homogeneous population for a long time. But how has that been reflected in faith?
Well, I'd say before Europeans came here, we still had diversity. We had a lot of different belief systems among the indigenous peoples. But even before Iowa was a state, one of the fascinating things that I think not enough people are aware of is the last man arrested and jailed for blasphemy in the United States was a man named Abner Kneeland in Boston in 1838. And after he got out of prison, he came to Iowa to establish a free thinkers commune in the southeast part of the state named Salubria. It didn't last very long, but that kind of model of free thought, he wasn't pushing his views, he just wanted a place where he could express himself and people who felt like him could express themselves religiously as well. We've had so many different religious traditions represented here since Iowa did become a state. We have, there are three main branches of Judaism, Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative. There are synagogues here, just even if you limit it to Des Moines, we've got all three synagogues and other synagogues as well. We have tremendous diversity within Christianity itself. And especially since the 1960s, we have seen tremendous growth in Hindus and Buddhists. What Governor Ray did in the 1970s, establishing Iowa as a refugee resettlement area, was a really humanitarian and courageous thing to do during that time, and it has enriched us so much with the range of religious systems that we have here. We have so many Buddhist temples of so many different kinds, and we've got the gorgeous Hindu temple in Madrid, and we've got now two, just in the Des Moines area, Sikh gurdwaras, one in Johnston that was purpose-built as a gurdwara. So really, if you walk around your community, you might see a lot more religious diversity than you're expecting here. People don't expect it, but it is here, and it has been here for decades, if not, well over a century.
You mentioned the people coming to Iowa in an effort to practice their faith. We were a place that a number of different religious communities came mm-hmm. to settle to practice their faith and start their communities and go into the future. As Iowa developed during the settlement years, were there conflicts because of that?
It's interesting. I'm not a specialist in Iowa's history. I actually specialize in medieval Christianity and more Ireland than Iowa, but it's interesting when I've interviewed a number of people representing different religious groups throughout the state, and again focusing on the Des Moines area. But among the groups I've talked to, Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Buddhists, atheists, and the only time, people had multiple examples of intolerance, individual episodes of intolerance. But it's interesting, the one group that really pointed to sort of sustained intolerance was the Amana community. But it was interesting that the intolerance that they spoke of was not so much directed at their faith, it was directed at their ethnicity, because they are primarily German, of German descent. And during World War I and especially World War II, Germans were seen by many Americans as the enemy because we were on opposite sides. So the people I spoke with at Amana pointed out, like, a lot of the people who were pointing the finger at them for being German also had German ethnicity in them, and that the Amana community had been there for far longer than some of the people who had come over more recently and were pointing the finger at the Amana community as being somehow un-American because they retained the aspects of their German identity.
When I look at some of the most recent numbers about the faiths that people practice in Iowa, here are some numbers from the Pew Research Center. And the numbers that they have say that 77% of Iowans identify themselves as Christian. But of course, that large number, that large percentage represents so many different ways of practicing one's faith. I mean, there are many different branches of Christianity. So when we look at that number, that 77% that identify as Christian, does that show us that there is an overwhelming majority that is similar, or is that kind of a number that hides a lot of diversity?
Well, I think it does both. I do think that Christians do share some certain core similarities in their beliefs that can unite them as Christians. But certainly, even if you were to look at a church, a given church, you would find tremendous diversity in the pews there. So I think it does really hide more diversity. But at the same time, there are some core similarities. And of course, there have been sharp, sharp disagreements between Christians of various denominations throughout the ages. And, you know, I focus on the medieval Christianity, which is a time in Western Europe where I focus. You ostensibly only had the Catholic Church, but within the Catholic Church, you still had some tremendous diversity as well. So we have common ground, but we also have strong, strong differences. And what we need to do is to figure out how to understand that those differences can be assets that strengthen us rather than divisions between us.
Well, and the reason that I ask about that is because when I think about diversity growing in Iowa, I think about the many Hispanics that have moved into Iowa and become part of our communities. And of course, many of those individuals are Catholic. And I wonder how that has changed the Catholic Church in Iowa, or do we find people separating to worship?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question. I know there are a number of churches that have multiple communities and bilingual services within them. But that's something that a modern, you know, contemporary religious leader in the Christian faith could probably speak to much more effectively.
Right. And as I mentioned, we'd love to hear your experiences this hour. As you've seen your faith change and how faith is practiced in your community change, talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org is our email address. You can also call 866-780-9100. I want to continue looking at some of these statistics before we broaden the conversation with people of different religious backgrounds and talk about their experiences. The next number on the list, as I mentioned, 77% identify as Christian. 21% are unaffiliated. That's a number that has grown a lot in recent years in Iowa and really everywhere in the United States. What does that represent to you?
Well, it's a really complex group. I think one of the things it's, you know, we can talk again about how there are similarities. There's some reason why they can be classed together, but there is also tremendous diversity within that group as well. One thing that I think sometimes gets misunderstood, people assume that non-affiliated means non-religious or non-spiritual or non-believing, and that's not necessarily the case. 21% is a little bit lower than it is nationwide as far as the Pew Research Center has found. We're at least as of 2014, and again, those numbers could have significantly changed since then.
Right.
But 23% are currently non-affiliated. And this is a group that gets called the nuns, not to confuse them with Catholic or Buddhist nuns of N-U-N-S, but the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, meaning non-affiliated. Of that 23%, only 3% are atheists. And atheists generally say, I believe there is no God. Although, interestingly, Pew says, you know, some of the people who describe themselves as atheists still say they believe in God. So it's not quite clear. Again, we have this complexity. 4% of that 23% is agnostic. And an agnostic is someone who says, I don't know if there's a God or not. So it's open to both possibilities. But the other 16% of that 23% really reflect strong beliefs. And it's interesting, too, that atheists feel a strong sense of wonder at the creation. They see we can't be oversimplistic in how we understand the atheist and think that just because someone's an atheist that they totally shut off a religious aspect or what other people might identify as religious. But it is significant, you know, that in 2007, as far as the Pew Research Center has found, that number was at 16%. Now it's at 23%, which makes it the fastest growing group in the United States. And we also see this in Western Europe as well, where more and more people are becoming not religiously affiliated.
It is very interesting. And again, we mentioned these numbers are from 2014, and I think things are changing rapidly in Iowa. But the numbers, as they go on, show Islam in Iowa about 1%. And that's growing, I think, quite quickly, just from my personal observations. And you could probably weigh in on that as well. Hinduism in Iowa and Sikhism, Buddhism, Judaism, all less than 1%. But that I feel those numbers sort of hide the significance of these other religions.
Yes, I'd agree. And also one of the things I find interesting is Baha'i. A lot of people aren't aware of the Baha'i religious tradition. And we have 99 counties in Iowa, and we've got at least one Baha'i in each one. So it's really interesting that you might only have a few, but they're spread throughout the state.
It is interesting. As these numbers do grow, we're also, of course, in an environment right now where there is a lot of contentious language mm-hmm. being heard about religions and about people of different faith. How have you seen that reflected, again, in Iowa, in your community?
Mm-hmm. Well, in my community, my community is a very open, inclusive one. And so where I've seen less inclusion is outside of my particular community and in the newspapers. And, you know, given that Iowa has the first in the nation status, we have an awful lot of attention put on our state. And we have the attention put on us by the political candidates, as well as by journalists who are reporting on this, as well as by people doing polls and surveys trying to get, you know, the pulse of Iowa as some kind of, you know, pulse of the nation. And I was very, very concerned in September when some political candidates started speaking about registries for particular religious groups. And the talk has escalated since then. And since all eyes were on Iowa, you know, to some extent New Hampshire as well, but at that time there were a lot of surveys being done, and over one third of Iowa Republicans were saying that a particular religion should be illegal. And that is very problematic.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about religious diversity in Iowa. My guest is Maeve Callen. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're exploring religious diversity in Iowa, cultural identity. We want to hear from you this hour. We want to hear about your experiences, your perspectives. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Maeve Callen. She is an associate professor of religion at Simpson College. She'll be giving a talk at noon today as part of the Iowa International Center's dialogue series. It's called What We Believe: Understanding Religious and Cultural Identities in Iowa. And we're also going to be bringing a number of people with different religious backgrounds into the conversation throughout the next few minutes. And again, as I mentioned, we do want to hear from you as well. And first, I want to turn to Gurwinder Singh Kapoor. He's a practicing Sikh living in West Des Moines. Hello, Gurwinder.
Hello. Hi, how are you, Charity?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you have been living in Iowa for almost 25 years now. And when you first moved to Iowa, was there a place that you could go as a Sikh to practice your religion?
No. At that time, we were very fortunate. There were about 10 to 15 Sikh families, most of them who were doctors, gas station owners. And we actually had homes that we organized once a week, a get-together to practice a session on Sikhism, or we would attend a session on prayers once a week, and then we'd have food after that, a little social. So that went on for about 6 to 7 years. Then we never had a temple. But in 1998, we were very fortunate that we were looking for a proper place, because we had a lot of Sikh births and celebrations and weddings, and there was no place to or funerals do. We didn't have a place or a priest to conduct these ceremonies. So finally, we were able to find a nice, it was actually a Seventh-day Adventist church. They were very, very nice, and they offered us a good price. We bought that and converted that to a Sikh Gurdwara, our holy place of worship. And since 1997, we've had that Gurdwara going, and we have our membership growing up to about 200 Sikh members now. So that has been very fortunate. And just recently, we opened a Sikh temple in Westmore, in Johnston. And so our Sikh, the number of people who are practicing Sikhs is spreading around Iowa right now.
Now, I think this is a religion that a lot of people really don't know very much about. And I know there is a great deal that you could tell us about it. And Sikhism is the fifth largest organized religion in the world. But can you give me a couple of basic fundamental principles of Sikhism to help us understand what it's about?
Well, the word Sikh or Sikhism is the religion. Sikh is a practicing a person who practices Sikhism means disciple. The Sanskrit word of Sikh is actually, or Punjabi, is disciple or learner. Like the word S-E-E-K, Sikh, it's the same thing, a learner. And Sikhism is a monotheistic religion that actually originated in the Punjab region of South Asia during the 15th century. And the fundamental belief of Sikhs are actually articulated or assembled in a book called the Guru Granth Sahib, about 1,400 pages. And that is equivalent to the Sikh Bible, to the Holy Bible or the Torah. So the Sikhs believe the teachings of the Guru Granth Sahib. And Sikhs here today, if you recognize a Sikh, it's very easy to distinguish a Sikh because he wears a turban and they're not allowed to cut their hair. So one of the religious tenets of Sikhism is to keep our hair. And many of us wear a turban and keep our beards too. So that's one of the distinguishing factors of Sikhism. But the tenets are very important in Sikhism. And the tenets that we practice in Sikhism is, there are really about three tenets that is very important to all our Sikhs here. And the practice of charity, the practice of meditation, which is Naam, Vanchakna, which is also the practice of giving in our religion, and help. So Kirat Karna, doing good deeds also, is part of the tenets of Sikhism. So Sikhism actually originated in Punjab, and today we are spread around the world. I just got statistics that mentioned that 25 million Sikhs around the world today.
Now, many of the religions that we'll talk about this hour are not something that you can see when you meet an individual. And as you just mentioned, part of being a Sikh has to do with your appearance, with your hair, with your turban. And so people, when they look at you, they know, they either know that you're a Sikh or they know that you are not necessarily like them. How has that affected you and your life in Iowa over the years?
Tremendously. I was not very much affected in right before 2001, during September 11. But until we had a son born in our house, and now he's 12 years old, people used to make fun, people used to sneer, people used to make jokes about towel heads, and I just used to ignore it. But until you have children growing up in your family, it becomes, and especially a Sikh boy and a Sikh girl, it becomes a tremendous challenge. And I'll give you an instance. About 4 years ago, our 12-year-old and myself, we were at a restaurant in Des Moines. And as we walked in, there were some adults snickering, and I didn't think of anything, but I could hear them saying, "Osama, go home. Osama, this is not your place. Get out." And I tried to ignore it, but my 12-year-old said, "Papa, they're talking to you." And I was like, no, that can't be it. I said, just ignore it. Then it became loud, and what shocked me and was my turning point that we need awareness here in Iowa about Sikhs is when I looked at that trembling hand of my son and his terrified and shocking eyes, I don't know what prompted me, but I walked up to them and to the adult, the senior adult in that group. I told him, I said, "We are Americans. This is our home. We live here. And we are not Muslims. And we are not Osama." And they walked right out snickering and laughing. That point, my son looks up to me and he says, "Papa, I am an American. And I live here. Why do they make fun of us?" And I said, "You got to remember something, young man. When you grow up, people are going to make fun of your turban, but you got to be very diplomatic and tell them who you are and where you're from, and you are an American. That's the first thing. So, yes, we do get that, but we've learned that we have to build that understanding by being very, very conscious about our dialogue. And, you know, we have to try our best to be nice so that we don't want to, not confrontational, but more being polite. And in terms of education and awareness is important.
Of course, there have been some really, really ugly events in the United States directed towards Sikhs and largely out of complete ignorance. I mean, there have been murders committed on the basis of someone wearing a turban, even if they don't understand that that represents that the person is part of this religion. How, in the recent years in Iowa, you've had that incident, but overall, how do people react to you? Do you feel like they understand what your turban represents?
In Iowa itself, I think we have been very fortunate to have Professor Maeve Kalin and Professor Tim Knepper from Drake University, who have introduced Sikhism in their syllabus, which allows many young students and graduates who are coming out from these, you know, good colleges, that they understand Sikhism. And I do get occasions when somebody would walk up to me, and I'd be nervous, and he would look at me, shake my hand, and says, "You're a Sikh." And I'm just dumbfounded. I said, the awareness is coming. But true, there are times and occasions, like during the state fair, where somebody would turn around and call us a raghead or towel, but we just ignore it, and we know that it's ignorance. But there is an awareness that is happening, and I'm so happy, and many of us Sikhs are realizing that that awareness is helping to bridge that gap of ignorance. Churches would invite us to the Sikh temple, to their churches to give us presentations. I've had occasions where, or many of our Sikhs in our Sikh temples have had the occasions of actually visiting schools to talk about Sikhism, and that has recently picked up. So that has helped tremendously, especially our youngsters who now come up to me and sometimes say, "Hey, you're a Sikh and not a genie." I say, "Yes, I am." And that really helps a lot. And that gives you a sense of a feeling of, you know, satisfaction that, you know, the education is in the right direction. The awareness is in the right direction. Yeah.
There, of course, are other people living in Iowa who also wear symbols of their religion. Now, of course, you see many cross necklaces, that kind of thing. But as Islam has grown in Iowa, we see a lot of women wearing the hijab or even wearing a burqa. And Maeve, as we see more of these symbols, such as the turban, such as the garments worn by many Muslim women, how do you think that changes how we interact with each other in Iowa?
Well, I think that's up to us to decide how we interact with people. And I understand, you know, one of my students who had never heard of Sikhism before taking a class in which he was required to study it, and he wrote his research paper on the Sikhs, and that required him doing a lot of research, but also interviewing Sikhs and attending services. And he called his paper "Don't Fear the Turban," because he had feared the turban, because he didn't understand what the turban signified, but he knew that Osama bin Laden wore a turban. And so he equated the turban with Islamic terrorists who had attacked his country. And when he got to know the Sikhs, and he understood that the turban is actually a symbol of virtue and kindness and compassion and wisdom, and it's a happy thing. I'm sure when that person who shook Gurwinder's hand, when he saw the turban, it made him happy because he understood how what good, generous people the Sikhs are. And I think people, it's understandable to fear what you don't know, especially when you've had negative associations. If you take something like the burqa, which can be really alienating to a lot of Americans, then they don't understand what it means, and they will equate it with, you know, attacks on our country or attacks on women's rights or any number of things. I think what we've got to do is understand that we have that reaction and find the occasions where we can talk to the people, you know, where we can talk to each other, where we can understand, why do you wear the hijab? Because for an awful lot of women, it is their choice, and it is liberating to them to wear the hijab. And we need to understand from their perspectives instead of just projecting our own assumptions onto them. But at the same time, it's also useful for us to be able to express our own perspective and why we feel the way we do.
This hour, we're understanding religious and cultural identities in Iowa. We'd love to hear from you as well. With me, Maeve Callan of Simpson College. And I've also been talking with Gurwinder Singh Kapoor, who's a practicing Sikh living in West Des Moines. We'll welcome a few more people into the conversation, but we also have a lot of people on the phone who want to join in the conversation. So let's take a couple of calls here. Peter's on the line in West Des Moines. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Charity. This is a wonderful program. I'm personally grew up in the Episcopal Church here in Des Moines, and when I moved to Wisconsin, I converted to Armenian Orthodox, which is a much different Christian religion than Episcopalian or the standard Western Church. And the experience in the Armenian church, you have other books in the Bible than the standard four that you find in the New Testament. And it also relates a little bit more to Jesus and the fact that Jesus was Jewish. Too many Western churches separate Jesus from his Judaism, his life as a Jewish person, and which is wrong, because you can't understand Jesus and his experience without understanding Judaism. But the other nice thing, and when I came back to Iowa, we have this great diversity of different religions. And it's great to also be able to explore them, because this makes life better for people when they do this. They experience the people, they experience how they live, they experience the food and the culture, and it enriches our own lives.
So Peter, I hear you saying that no matter what your belief, exploring other religions, obviously it's a broadening experience, but what I'm hearing you say, Peter, is that it also deepens your understanding of your own religious beliefs. And Maeve, that is an interesting path to go down, because all of these religions are connected in some way.
They are. They share a lot of similarities. And you'll hear a lot of people use the expression, all paths lead to the same mountaintop. But that can be an oversimplistic approach to it, because the differences are very real and there and important. But I do hear time and again from my students, and there's some apprehension about studying other religions, especially when you feel as strongly as you do about your own faith, and you can see learning about other religions as threatening in some way. But my students invariably, well, at least the ones who share their perspective with me, say how much it enriches their understanding of their own tradition, and how much more they appreciate their own religious tradition as well as appreciating the other one. So it's not like it's when you appreciate one, it has to take away from the appreciation of another, but they really become very strengthened, many of them anyway, strengthened in their own faith and appreciating, they're learning things about their own faith by finding the similarities as well as by appreciating the differences with other religious traditions.
And when students come to you, do you find that they've had an opportunity to learn about other religions before they reach college?
Some of them do. Not. It depends. Religion isn't taught as often as I think it should be in public schools, because there's a concern that it might violate constitutional rights in some way, although it doesn't. If you're not teaching people doctrinally, if you're not teaching people what they should believe, you're teaching people about what people do believe and helping them understand religion. I think that's vitally important. And sometimes churches or other religious traditions will require their members to learn about other religious traditions before they commit to their own, or as part as of how they commit to their own. But generally speaking, they don't get as in-depth as we do in our course, although, of course, you could study a single religion for your whole life and barely scratch the surface. So we don't do any of the diversity justice in a semester, but they do get a strong sense of the diversity. And their eyes are just, it's one of my favorite courses to teach because I can see people's minds open right before me. And it's a really marvelous thing to behold.
We're almost to a break, but Gurwinder, you have a kind of a unique perspective on this because you, as a practicing Sikh, also went to Catholic school when you lived in Singapore, which must have been a really interesting experience.
Yes, I was very fortunate. And my grandfather insisted that being devout Sikhs, we had to attend Catholic schools and, learn second languages. But attending Catholic school really opened me up to understanding how missionaries in primary and secondary school, how they were so open and they encouraged us to talk about our religion. So it was not just about catechism or saying our grace or our Hail Marys. It was more about sharing your faith and understanding what the long hair, what the bangle, the karas, the 5Ks. And that allowed us, it gave us the confidence growing up in Singapore, and especially in a Christian-aided school.
And we'll have to talk more about this in just a moment. We're talking about religious diversity in Iowa this hour with me, Gurwinder Singh Kapoor, and Maeve Callan. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about religious diversity and cultural identity in Iowa. Maeve Callan is here with me. She's an associate professor of religion at Simpson College. She'll be giving a talk today at noon as part of the Iowa International Center's Dialogue Series. Her talk is called What We Believe, Understanding Religious and Cultural Identities in Iowa. And her talk will be at the Meredith Conference Corps in Des Moines today at noon. That's a program that is open to the public. Also with me is Gurwinder Singh Kapoor. He's a practicing Sikh living in West Des Moines. And now I want to bring Prakash Koparapu into the conversation. He's a committee member for the Hindu Temple and Cultural Center of Iowa in Madrid. Hello, Prakash.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And can you give me a little bit of your background? You've lived in Iowa now for about 6 years?
That's correct.
All right. And what brought you to the state?
Employment and opportunity. I migrated from India in 96 as a student and worked in South Carolina, and I moved from South Carolina to Iowa.
Now, coming to Iowa, what kind of a Hindu community have you found here?
Early part of 2004, when I first moved here, the community was very small, and the closest temple we have is either in Chicago or Minneapolis or St. Louis. And the temple in Des Moines is still in discussions, and there is a small structure that was built on the riverbanks in Madrid, Iowa. And we were gathering there and then doing some small ceremonies, etc. And we do not have a priest at that point, and we have visiting priests from various other big cities.
And then things changed in 2005, right?
Absolutely. And the temple is inaugurated in 2005. And as a matter of fact, last week, and June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, we had our 11th anniversary celebration with priests coming from all over the country. And did all the ceremonies in a grandeur manner. It felt just like in India.
That's beautiful. And give me an idea, how many Hindus practice their faith at the Madrid Temple? How large is your community?
As of the API's recent publishing, we have about 16,700 families in Iowa, and about 95% of them are Hindu practicing. And also people from Nepal also practice Hinduism, and Sri Lanka, etc., various other countries from South Asia.
Now, as I did earlier when I was talking with Gurwinder about Sikhism, give me a little bit of background. I think a lot of people have heard about Hinduism or heard of Hinduism, but I think, again, this is a situation where a lot of us don't know very much about it. So can you give me some basic principles?
Sure, absolutely. Hinduism is thousands of years old and one of the oldest religion in the world. And it is based on four Vedas. And the Vedic scriptures pretty much defines the way of life and the spirituality, and also in general how to live and how the nature and planetary constellations and everything, astrology, and not to mention the yoga came out of the Vedic scriptures, and how to perform Surya Namaskara, etc. And Hinduism pretty much evolved over thousands of years and then met its challenge to the current changes in society as it grew.
Now, I think, of course, a lot of people practice yoga, and a lot of us encounter Hinduism in maybe in novels or in movies. And do you find that people who think that they know a little bit about Hinduism may have some ideas that are pretty outdated about what the religion is like?
Outdated is a very interesting perspective, for sure. As mentioned, as the generations change and as the circumstances change, for example, it could be as simple as me moving from India to US. The way I practice Hinduism is had to be customized or adjusted as per the availability of the practicing capabilities, etc. over here. So similarly, if you look at the practices that are more of a social traditional kind of coined as Hindu practices over the centuries, as a society and as a religion, Hinduism drove and abolished most of the practices that are deemed as most of superstitions and not be justified. So it evolved over a period of time, such as about 200 years ago, there is this practice called sati, where the wife has to jump into the fire when husband is cremated. That was taken out, and 200 years ago, it is not practiced. And for example, there is another tradition where child marriages were performed about 100 years ago. So it became a social issue, so religion changed. And as recently as dowry scenarios, where there's the biggest thing, even currently everyone say, hey, you get dowry, and there are a lot of mishaps that happen out of the dowry system, and that was abolished. So the Hindu religion over a period of time has changed and responded to the negativity.
As a Hindu, how do you feel about the fact that something like yoga has become so much a part of American culture? We've taken the physical part of this practice and for many people separated it from the spiritual part of the practice, and it's become a major part of the culture here. How does that make you feel as a Hindu?
It makes me really proud, definitely. In the new Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, once he became Prime Minister, one of his first achievements at a global level is June 21st is the International Yoga Day. United Nations recognizes June 21st, the longest day of the year, as International Yoga Day. So that really prompted the awareness of yoga and the importance of it. The origination of the yoga came from the early morning Surya Namaskara, and how it is performed along with chanting, it's called Sandhya Vandana, and which was mainly done by the sect of Brahmins and Vaishyas and Kshatriyas in the age-old caste system. And now that is kind of taken out, and as you mentioned, from religious, it kind of transformed into where everyone can do it. And everyone does it, and it over the centuries over the years it grew. Now the yoga is done by almost everyone.
And Maeve, I want to bring you into the conversation here again as well. With something like yoga, which began as a Hindu practice and has become a much more commonplace thing, there are other parts of different religions that have become general parts of our culture, but people may not know where they come from. Do you think that increases tolerance, or do you think that in some cases there's this ignorance that actually does a disservice to some of these different cultural practices?
Well, I think it can do both, depending on the individual and how they respond to it. And we have seen a lot of people do appreciate yoga for the for the physical health benefits, but also for the mental and the spiritual benefits, because it can be a great way of getting yourself ready for meditation. And meditation is another thing that is common to many religions and has become very common among Americans who might not see it as religious at all, but they really appreciate its physical and mental, as well as perhaps its spiritual benefits. But I do think there is a lot of ignorance, and I'm not going to have the exact details right, but there was a Hindu Miss America recently. And when she won, there was a lot of negativity directed at her. And, you know, the things that Gurwinder heard about Osama were directed at her. And she has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. And the vast, vast majority of Muslims have nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. So I do think it can go both ways. And also there can be an appropriation of other people's religious traditions. So I think it all depends on how you approach it. And, you know, also how the people of the particular religious traditions whose practices are being incorporated into other religions, how they feel about that practice
and
as well.
Of course, we don't have a voice on the program today that represents Islam, although if you're interested in learning more about Islam and the Muslim faith, we did an entire hour not that long ago on Talk of Iowa, understanding Islam and understanding Islam in Iowa. Right now, of course, is Ramadan, and this is a practice. We'd call it a holiday, but it's more than that. It's different than how many Christians would characterize a holiday that goes on for an entire month. And I feel like some of the important days, the important practices, the religious ceremonies, the celebrations, the holidays have become higher profile in many ways. And do you feel like that? The fact that people even know the name of Ramadan now, which I don't think, I certainly hadn't heard of it when I was a child. Does that promote understanding, Maeve?
I think it has the potential to do so, but not necessarily. I mean, again, it's in how people respond to it. I think if people understand how committed a person is to their faith when they're engaging in a practice like the fast of Ramadan, that can help. Also, they're not fasting for an entire month. They're fasting during the daylight hours of an entire month. And there's a great celebration when the sun goes down called an iftar. And Muslims regularly invite non-Muslims to partake in the breaking of the fast, even though the non-Muslims are not expected at all not to fast or to fast. And so the more that people partake in the experience with the members of the different religions, and more people get to know people and not just terms and holidays, I think that will go a long way. You know, there are a lot of religious traditions that do get taken over by American society because they're fun or they're fascinating, but I think there needs to be that connection to the original tradition and that respect offered to the people who created the tradition to begin with.
I want to bring Reverend Dave Sikulka into the conversation now, pastor for the Urbandale United Church of Christ. Hello.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And as I mentioned earlier, 77% of Iowans identify themselves as Christian, but within that Christian umbrella, there are so many different ways to practice Christianity. And Dave, tell us, as I asked both of my previous guests to give us a few basic principles of their religious faith, tell me a little bit about your congregation and some of your principles. What makes you unique?
I think one of the big differences between my church and a lot of others is that we don't define our faith by doctrinal limitations. We don't see people who are outside of a circle of beliefs as being other than us. We encourage people to think about their faith as a journey, and whatever carries them toward the center or helps them to discover within themselves what is true and what is meaningful in their lives, that's something to be pursued. And so we embrace diversity because it helps all of us on that journey of self-discovery. As was mentioned earlier, you know, the more you understand about someone else's journey, the better you understand your own. And to see those common threads where the journeys interweave and we kind of travel for a time together, and then our paths may diverge, but that doesn't mean we can't come back together at some point in the future. So I think the idea of embracing diversity as opposed to tolerating it is a hallmark of our community.
As a member of the majority faith in Iowa, the majority faith in the United States, do you feel like you have a responsibility to help members of your congregation understand these other faiths?
Oh, absolutely. We encourage folks to be broad in their experience of religion. When we have confirmation classes and Sunday school classes, we take field trips to synagogues and mosques, and we bring in speakers from other religions to our adult education times, and it's all very edifying for our folks.
Well, and Maeve and I were talking earlier about how some people have a little bit of a defensiveness when the idea of educating young people, for example, about other religions comes up. And with you introducing ideas, principles of other religions to members of your congregation, how do you feel that affects their faith? And how does it inform your faith?
Well, you know, I think one of the differences is that, you know, if you tell somebody what they should believe, they may adopt that belief, but it won't be a very strong belief. If they discover it on their own, if it becomes meaningful to them because of their own personal experience, then it's a much stronger belief. And so I think that having this exposure to other belief systems is really strengthening to their own faith. And even if someone should see something they like in another religion and say, you know, I want to try that or I want to do that, we see that as a positive thing. We have many members of our congregation who resonate with Buddhist teachings, for instance, and it doesn't conflict with what we are trying to accomplish. If anything, it helps folks to find the path that suits them.
With the political climate right now, I mean, you've been doing this kind of work for many years, trying to help people understand others around them. Do you feel like we are becoming less tolerant as a culture?
I do. I think we missed a golden opportunity recently when our governor signed a proclamation to encourage people to read their Bibles. It would have, I think, been much more helpful if he would have encouraged all of our citizens to turn to their sacred writings, whatever they might be, or the philosophies that help them in life, and to sort of ground themselves in those things that they find uplifting. I think that would have been a much better way for our government to address that particular issue.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Reverend Dave Sicklecook, pastor for the Urbandale United Church of Christ. Also, thank you so much, Prakash Koparapu, committee member for the Hindu Temple and Cultural Center of Iowa in Madrid. Thank you, Prakash.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to Gurwinder Singh Kapoor, practicing Sikh, who lives in West Des Moines. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much, Charity.
And Maeve Callan, thank you for prompting this conversation today. And as you listen to these voices together, you think about your students. Are you feeling optimistic about tolerance and understanding in Iowa?
Absolutely. I think I agree with what was just said about the proclamation and how it could have been better handled. But I do see growing tolerance, and especially among the young, and as was also said, embracing diversity, not just tolerating it. I see that on the rise as well.
Maeve Callan is Associate Professor of Religion at Simpson College. She'll be giving a talk today at noon as part of the Iowa International Center's Dialogue Series. It's called What We Believe, Understanding Religious and Cultural Identities in Iowa. It's at the Meredith Conference Corps in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa.